Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, in this first half hour, let's talk about climate change, and how Iowa and the Midwest is figuring into the climate change forecast. Also, we want to talk this weekend, UN climate negotiations held in Bonn, Germany, ended. You may have caught that in the news. It was a 2 weeks of talks aimed at laying the groundwork for some faster action to curb climate change, dealing with its impacts. But we want to focus mainly this first half hour on the recently first public draft of the fourth National Climate Assessment. It was released a few days ago. It comes out every 4 years, mandated by Congress. Developed by the U.S. Global Change Research Program in order to help the nation, in its words, understand, assess, predict, and respond to climate change. Joining us to talk climate change, Gene Talkley, professor of agronomy at Iowa State University in our Ames studio. Gene, welcome back to our program.
Thanks for inviting me.
Charles Stainer is with us as well, associate professor of chemical and biochemical engineering at the University of Iowa in our Iowa City studio. Charles, welcome to you.
Thanks, Ben.
Gene, let me start off with you. Most people would not have heard of this mandated climate assessment that takes place every 4 years. Give us a little bit more information about what this assessment does.
Well, this, as you pointed out, brings the scientific community together to assess changes, the best science available in understanding the changes in our climate, the current climate, how it's changed over the 20th century, and then using the best available science to project this into the 21st century, and then look at the impacts and consequences of these changes.
Mm-hmm. And describe briefly your direct involvement with this assessment.
I was involved in the third assessment, which was issued in May of 2014 as a co-author on the agriculture chapter. On this round, the fourth assessment, which will be issued in final form in December of 2018, I'm involved with the Midwest chapter, focusing on the agriculture section of the Midwest chapter. And I was also a contributing author to the Climate Science Special Report, which was issued a few months ago.
And to clarify, I think that final form, that final report late next year, will talk about the impact primarily, right?
That's correct. The first volume was the Climate Science Special Report, and that was focused on the climate and climate changes, while the second one really focuses on impacts.
Charles, broadly speaking, or perhaps in terms of highlights, what have we learned since the last major reports on our climate?
I guess some of the things that caught my eye and I wanted to bring to the attention of listeners are that the predictions and understanding of sea level rise were specifically highlighted as being improved from the fourth assessment relative to the third assessment in 2013.
Improved in terms of the sea levels not as high as we thought, or we're just better at predicting them?
No, we're better at predicting them.
That's what you mean by improved.
Increased scientific understanding,
okay.
Better observations, better agreement between observations and the prediction models. And actually, the numerical values are higher and the rates of change are higher. And so that's one of the surprises of the within the climate science community is that the sea level rise and ice loss are occurring a little faster. Many of the predictions from the 90s are spot on in terms of temperature and atmospheric levels, but the cryosphere, the ice and snow, seems to be harder to predict.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we're maybe 1,000 miles away from any coast here in Iowa, but remind us of the impact these rising sea levels are likely to have, will be having on coastal cities in the U.S.
Well, the range of forecasts for 2100 is 1.1 to 4.3 feet of sea level rise globally average, and up to 8.5 feet if we have large ice sheet disintegration, mm-hmm. which can't be ruled out at this point. So large sea level rises like that can cause increase in frequency and severity of coastal flooding.
Making a number of parts of our coastal cities uninhabitable.
Right. And even in the Midwest, we end up getting involved in paying for the response, the funds for rebuilding that come out of national funds, as well as when it happens in other parts of the world, we have to respond through humanitarian aid, military assistance, and sometimes that refugee flow that is induced by a large coastal flood can then destabilize parts of the world and cause long-term problems.
Gene Tockley, take us inland here to the Midwest and Iowa. What in this report is most significant for us in this area?
Well, I think the key thing that is emerging is the change in the hydrological cycle in our region. That is, the humidities have been going up for the last 30 years, and they're projected to continue to go up. And this brings, particularly in the spring and early summer, and this fuels a number of different consequences, such as increases in precipitation, increases in extreme events, such as the heavy rainfall events, the 5, 6, 7, 8-inch rainfall events that we seem to be experiencing every year. Coupled with that is also a rise in the summertime, well, both winter and summertime temperatures that are going to now be bumping up against some key growth and reproductive factors in our agricultural crops.
Mm-hmm. Specifically to the point of our crops as an agricultural state here, what can you say broadly speaking? What's in store in the next couple decades?
Well, first of all, the flooding and the early heavy rains during planting season, particularly April, May, June, have been a problem, such as in 2013 when we were not able to plant 700,000 acres in northwest Iowa. Well, these experiences are going to be more frequent. So we start off the growing season potentially on a bad foot in many years. As the season progresses, we'll be experiencing more of these heavy rains, more rains of more than an inch and a quarter, which I use as a benchmark for an erosion-promoting rainfall event. So we're going to see more of those. And in the midsummer, the increase in extreme five-day temperatures is going to start to be problematic because these may overlap with our pollination period for corn, for instance, and lead to declines in reproduction successes for our crops.
Mm-hmm. Gene, so what is the message there specifically for Iowa farmers of corn, soybeans, whatever? Can you do anything about it? Should you think about changing crops?
Well, first of all, in the short term, farmers have responded in many ways, at least many of our farmers, by widening the grassed waterways that they have to prevent gullying in fields, particularly when the soil is vulnerable in the early spring, spring and early summer. Planting seed with a wider range of pollination so that if we should get a heat wave, five-day heat wave that would impair pollination, say in mid-July, that, well, maybe they've got some seed that is going to pollinate in late July, early August, so that they could decrease their vulnerability to these kind of events.
If you've just joined us, Gene Tockley is with me, a professor of agronomy at Iowa State University. Charles Stainer, associate professor of chemical and biochemical engineering at the University of Iowa, talking about climate change. A few days ago, the first public draft of the 4th National Climate Assessment was released. Comes every 4 years, mandated by Congress. We're going to have another part of that coming out next year that will deal specifically with the impact. Charles, talk a little bit more specifically about your research, because this all has to do with a lot of it has to do with we humans putting CO2 into the atmosphere, and that's precisely what you study.
Yeah, we have two measurement programs, one that deals with aerosols and their effects on clouds and weather, and then the second one is for greenhouse gas measurements, and I collaborate with the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. And there are 8 high-altitude, high-accuracy greenhouse gas measurement stations in the United States, and one of them is in eastern Iowa. And it's a tall tower, 1,100 feet. Gas is pumped down from the top, and we measure CO2 concentrations every 10 minutes. So we think of it like a lighthouse because it's tall and skinny, and we're the lighthouse keepers that make sure that the measurements that are taken are of the highest accuracy
and
possible.
And what are you seeing in recent years? Predictable rises in levels, stable levels? What can you say?
Well, the average for the last 7 days was 410 parts per million of CO2, and that the reason that you want to measure this in many places, there's thousands of places over the globe where greenhouse gases are measured, and we're not interested in just the average concentration, which is very important, but we're also interested in what are the high and low places, what are the high and low seasons, what are the high and low times of day, because that tells us about the processes that emit these gases or other processes that might absorb them onto the land surface or water.
Mm-hmm. Back to you, Gene, and this is often some leads to some confusion when one talks about climate science, and you talked about more extreme weather, torrential rains and so forth because of the increased humidity specifically for us rising in the Midwest. When we have a torrential rain or something like that out of the ordinary for any particular season, can you ever say, that's climate change, or does that just demonstrate a lack of understanding about climate change?
We can say that climate change has loaded the dice, so it's a little bit more a probability, higher probability that we are going to get these extreme events. There are some particular events that we can point a pretty high probability that climate change has been a factor. These it requires quite a bit of study and comparison with past events in order to do that. But there are some events that we know have been strengthened and exacerbated by climate change.
Okay, loading the dice. I'll try to keep that in mind. Not anyone, of course, without loaded dice, you can roll snake eyes or whatever you want to roll. But if they're loaded, you're more apt to roll certain combinations. Gene, how does Iowa and the Midwest compare to the rest of the country when it comes to changes caused by climate change? Are we having, we just had Charles talk about the sea level rise. Are we in for fewer changes, more changes? Can you say it that way?
The fourth climate assessment and particularly the climate science special report that's been issued should really be a wake-up call for the Midwest for two reasons. One is the change in the flow of moisture from the Gulf of Mexico. And here's an example of a change in climate that is having a direct effect. The Gulf of Mexico is warming. So that means that there's more evaporation of water. So we can imagine a big dome of water vapor in the atmosphere. It's deeper and it's warmer and it's more moist. And we're also seeing a strengthening of the high-pressure center to our east and the low-pressure center to our west during the spring and summer, which is exacerbating or intensifying the northward flow of this moisture from this big dome over the Gulf into our Midwest, and that's what's causing our increase in relative humidity or absolute humidity, actually, and also rainfall. So on the rainfall side, we know a lot more about that now, and it's pretty sobering. On the temperature side, one of the revelations that came out of the Climate Science Special Report was that the Midwest will be warming more than any other region in the country, and particularly in the summertime where our 5-day maximum temperatures, 1 in 10 5-day temperatures, will go up by 13 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's a sobering increase that is going to create some real challenges for a variety of work outdoors, pollination of crops, forest health, ecosystem changes. We're looking that's going to be something we really need to keep our eye on.
you said a wake-up call for the Midwest in particular. A wake-up call to do what, Gene?
To pay attention more to these changes and think ahead about the consequences and whether there can be any mitigation activities that we should be taking into account. For instance, our cities are going to be more vulnerable to heat waves and health effects. So how can we reduce the temperatures in our cities, green roofs, open spaces, more trees, shading homes, our construction, lighter colored roofs on homes will help to hold down these kind of extreme temperatures.
Charles, I wonder if you can explain one of the things focused on in this latest assessment. Compound extremes, what are they?
Well, Gene talked about loading the dice. So one of the features of the recent report was that scientists are becoming comfortable enough with their assessment of probabilities of single events, such as an extreme rainfall. And now they're starting to think about what happens if two extreme events piggyback on one another. So you get extreme rainfall on top of snowmelt.
Okay, so you've got the extreme rainfall dice that are loaded. I've got the snowmelt dice that are loaded. We roll them at the same time, and when they coincide, right?
Right. That becomes an event that just is a bigger event to deal with in terms of the cost and the cleanup and the impacts. A recent example is if you get strong rains together with storm surge, again, a coastal impact, not an Iowa impact. But I think that's a good example of the types of the direction that the impact scientists are moving to try to quantify not only the single extremes, but what if, drought plus heat wave instead of just one or the other.
Mm-hmm. You two are both scientists, but I have to veer a little bit into the politics here to get your views on this. Science and the people who study science don't seem to be held in, as high esteem or given as much appreciation as they have been given in prior Republican and Democratic administrations. President Trump has appointed climate science skeptics, outright deniers, to head, for instance, the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt, the Department of Energy, Rick Perry, also the Council on Environmental Quality, Kathleen Hartnett. There are other examples. You have a load of them, I'm sure you could name, who science not having the place at the table that it used to. I wonder, Gene, are you experiencing this apparent downgrading of science in your areas? Does it impact your work at all?
Well, it doesn't really impact our hasn't impacted my work. This will pass. The laws of physics win out in the end, always. And we know from the laws of physics where this is taking us. So, and it's becoming more than just an annoyance and inconvenience. It's becoming a huge economic factor, and it's becoming a national security factor. And so, as Charles mentioned, if we have more extreme events in regions like the Middle East that are already hazard prone, where are these people going to go? And also to the south of us, where one of the global hotspots is in the Caribbean and Central America, where are those people going to migrate to if their local conditions become close to uninhabitable? Or even in our southwest U.S., that if Phoenix has 100 to 120 days above 100 degrees Fahrenheit, as is projected on average by the end of the century, it's going to be pretty inconvenient to live in Phoenix or Las Vegas. Where are those people going to go? So then it becomes a national issue, and we're hoping that we are, by providing this information, can help planning those that are seeing the need for this, and so there will be policies that we can adopt in the future.
Mm-hmm. Okay, time to squeeze in one caller, Patrick, calling from Des Moines. I have to ask you to be brief, Patrick, but we're sure glad you called. Thanks.
Sure. Thanks for taking me.
Go ahead.
Hold on one sec. Sorry, I had the radio on my phone.
Okay.
My name's Patrick. My mom is a very active member of WILP, and they're and I think another one of her organizations is trying to write like a suggestion for a 25-year plan for Des Moines, Iowa. And I'm just curious, do you guys have any suggestions? What a responsible plan for the Midwest, like a city like Des Moines, look like?
Mm, nice local question, Patrick. Thanks. Who would tackle that? Gene, is that your area more?
Yeah, I've worked some with people that are forming these urban plans. Iowa City has one, and Des Moines, I think, has been proactive in this area. A lot of people are eager to get involved. What can we do locally? And so looking at green space, water, how is water moved in these extreme events across the city? Do we have drainage basins or reservoirs that can, catchment basins that can contain that and slow down the movement into rivers? Do we need to think about our building codes and how we construct our buildings, the energy use in our buildings, and what about bikeways that can reduce reliance on automobiles? So there are a lot of things that can be done locally where interested citizens can really get involved.
Mm-hmm. Briefly to the UN climate change talks that ended in Bonn. Gene, now news was made because from the U.S. perspective that U.S. coal and I think nuclear companies as well organized a presentation arguing that fossil fuels should be a key part of the solution to rising temperatures. Can a case be made in your eyes for that?
I think it's pretty weak. The burning of fossil fuels emits carbon dioxide, and we attempts to capture that and put it underground and so on are just are technically feasible, but economically just impractical. So I could say that fossil fuel like natural gas is viewed as a transition fuel. Some would argue that nuclear is a transition fuel until we really are able to exploit the full potential of renewables.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll have to end it there. Thank you very much, Gene Talkley, professor of agronomy at Iowa State University, Charles Stainer, associate professor of chemical and biochemical engineering at the University of Iowa. Charles and Gene, thanks for spending time with us.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll meet a history-making figure, an Iowan. She's an immigrant from Sudan, but also a U.S. citizen who just made history, Mazahir Salih, elected to Iowa City's City Council a few days ago. She's thought to be the very first Sudanese American elected to government in the country. Happened right here in Iowa. We'll talk with her in just a moment. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.